It's got a death curse.
So it's bothering me like me.
And then who locked you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Welcome back to another Horror 101 show. Once again, a recent death is steering this ship. In my time here in the horror business, there's one thing that I've noticed. Horror fans and wrestling fans go hand in hand. Now, admittedly, I hadn't been a fan since I was a kid back in the 80s. But recently, we lost one of the greats from that time. And for our 45th podcast, we're going to focus on a John Carpenter film that starred the late great Rowdy Roddy Piper.
You want a chance to say something, brother? I'll tell you what, man. Here you go. Take the little microphone. There you go. There you go. Put it in the little greasy paws. You want to do something? Then you go ahead. You say exactly what you want to say to these people.
Without a doubt, Piper was one of the greatest bad boys in the history of professional wrestling. You just love to hate him.
Hey, you think you're tough? Come on! Hey, you ain't nothing! You ain't nothing! I'll tell you one thing right now! You do not throw rocks at a man who's got a machine gun!
Joining me this time, we've got a full house. It's the world-famous Brian Stewart, the cult sensation Nick McPherson, my wife, the lovely Nude, and again, all the way from China.
The man is nefarious.
It's the nefarious Paul B.
So this part's getting cut out, right?
This whole part axed from the podcast. Yes, I could. I can guarantee.
It's okay. Just beep out like every second word. I'm gonna beep, and then I'm gonna go beep. Don't do that in Dearborn.
So we lost Roddy Piper on the same night we lost our black cat Sable. But this gives us a chance to do a film which John Carpenter made. He made this back in the heyday of where he just did horror, except for Big Trouble in Little China. Okay, Big Trouble in Little China was very fantasy-ish.
Great action movie.
This is more of a sci-fi. You know, this is something out of the fucking Twilight Zone film. And it starred Roddy Piper.
Well, the thing in a lot of ways is a science fiction movie, right?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
I cannot believe that you just said that. What kind of world is this?
Okay, does it deal with an alien? Sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I would... That's like saying Alien's a science fiction. Sure, it is. But that's... You'll find that in the horror section every time. So, They Live. Everyone here has seen this movie?
Well, except for this one who's never seen it.
Brian Sensen!
I've never seen this movie.
Oh, God.
It's been too long that since I've seen it, I don't remember a lot of it.
Dude! This is John Carpenter when he was still scoring his own films.
Yes. But I mean, if your local video store didn't have it within bike riding distance, you didn't see a lot of movies.
This movie was always on the Movie Network. Whatever it was called back in the day.
Yeah,
it was in the Movie Network. But you know what? Our first choice it was called.
Yeah, back in the day.
Yeah.
We had intermittent cable. We would only get cable when the cheap deals were up, and when they tried to raise the cable rates, we'd cancel. So we intermittently had cable as I was a kid. So I'm sure it played all the times that I didn't have cable.
If you ever saw it, if you're ever walking by, you see some like a close-up picture of somebody half taking the sunglasses off, and you can see in the reflection this thing, which you have signed by Roddy Piper there. So yeah, I figured we were going to do the Essential sequel after, you know, we were supposed to do that before Christopher Lee tribute. Christopher Lee passed away. We did the Christopher Lee tribute, which was an excellent show. Thank you again for helping me with that one.
Oh, you're welcome.
And so now, Roddy Piper passes away. And, you know, even before They Live or anything else, I mean, I know he had tons of, like, Z-grade movie. He was in a lot of movies. But They Live would probably have to be the most prominent professional movie that he had he'd ever done. And he was the star. He was it. You know?
They Live was his first movie.
Yep. Was it his first
and
movie?
And he quote-unquote, retired from wrestling to make this movie.
Hmm.
And he actually talks about in his autobiography how he wrestled at WrestleMania 3, which is his retirement match, at Pontiac Silverdome. And then right after that, he went for dinner with John Carpenter. And over dinner, they made the deal. And that was the whole thing right there. And that was his last. That was his last wrestling appearance for, I want to say a year, possibly two.
Did John Carpenter always have him in mind for this? Really?
Always had him in mind.
They Live was made in 1988. The screenplay was written by Carpenter, based off of a short story by Ray Nelson called 8 o'clock in the Morning. It comes off very much like an extended Twilight Zone episode, filled with sci-fi action and hints of horror. And I mentioned Twilight Zone specifically because Rod Serling would always incorporate the element of fear and politics that were relevant at the time when he wrote most of the episodes in the 50s. They Live is as much a political statement as it is entertainment.
Our human spirit is corrupted. Why do we worship greed? Because outside the limit of our sight, feeding off us, perched on top of us from birth to death, are our owners. Our owners. They have us. They control us. They are our masters. Wake up. They're all about you, all around you.
It's funny how the American dream, quote unquote, has become the enemy. You know what I mean? Like the American dream run rampant now. It's like, okay, yeah, you know, come to this land and do a great job and work well and you'll do well. No, that's not it at all.
Which is what Piper says at the beginning, right? That's what he believes in this country. He believes in working hard, making a day's wage. And of course, you know, we see the American dream is dead.
At the beginning of the film, we're introduced to Piper's character who doesn't even have a name in the film. He's a drifter, coming to LA looking for work. The job bank turns him away with disdain. He manages to find construction work and holds up in a little homeless shanty town. He's still optimistic of his chances at scoring a good life.
I deliver a hard day's work for my money. I just want the chance. It'll come. I believe in America. I follow the rules. Everybody's got their own hard times these days.
Our impulses are being redirected. We are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep.
Oh, goddamn hacker, that second damn night that asshole's cut in.
The movement was begun 8 months ago by a small group of scientists who discovered, quite by accident, these signals being sent through...
Some John Carpenter staples, he likes his grainy telecast footage, like we saw in Prince of Darkness.
Yeah.
The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. They have created a repressive society, and we are their unwitting accomplices.
He also likes his long track shots through, like, fence post slits. You see that a lot in his movies.
Yeah.
Apart from that, well, the score is his too, but at times the score kind of reminded me of Crocodile Dundee. Don't ask me why.
The harmonica and the bow.
A little bit.
Carpenter loves to use the same actors when he can, and They Live is no exception. In this film, you'll recognize Peter Jason from Prince of Darkness and In the Mouth of Madness, and teaming up with Piper for most of this film is Frank, played by Keith David, a veteran from The Thing.
What's inside there, Wally? All kinds of cardboard boxes, some kind of lab setup.
What do you mean?
There's no singing. It's a tape recorder.
Leave it alone, man. It ain't none of my business. Ain't none of yours.
Yeah, but our boy Gilbert's in there helping him.
It seems the church next to this shantytown is really an HQ for a movement against oppression.
I got a job now, and I plan on keeping it. I'm walking a white line all the time. I don't bother nobody. Nobody bothers me. You better start doing the same.
White line's in the middle of the road. It's the worst place to drive.
And before Piper gets a chance to figure it out, an army of police come in and bulldoze the entire place.
And he likes his sieges, doesn't he? Like, he likes his secure strongholds being attacked and overthrown.
And after he watches the cops come in and just roll all those homeless people out, he's shook. You can tell he's really shooken because, like he said, yeah, I believe in the American way and things are the way they should be. Have some patience. Things will come my way. No. There is a design to make sure that that's not correct for everybody who's not in the inn. You know what I mean? You can tell this movie from the John Carpenter angle. You can tell this movie was done right around Prince of Darkness because the score was very much like Prince of Darkness. And you can see, I saw Wyndham in there, the guy that fell to pieces as Bugs in there saying, pray for death. Remember him in Prince of Darkness? He's got a little bit part in that little party that goes south near the end there. The one guy that plays the professor, he's in there. And back in the 80s, he always recycled. You even saw the Asian guy with the long hair and the mustache. He was in Die Hard.
Remember? Yeah, he's the guy who used the chocolate bar.
Right.
And the torture and lethal weapon. Yeah.
And he was also in Big Trouble in Little China. Yeah. He was one of the head Wing Kong guys.
Yeah.
So Piper finds a box of sunglasses in a secret stash in that church. And when he puts a pair on, the whole world changes before his eyes. Billboards and magazines have one word printed on them. Obey. Consume. Marry and reproduce. Paper money simply says this is your God. And some people on the street, they just aren't looking the same anymore.
It figures it would be something like this.
As a matter of fact, they're looking real fucking ugly.
Excuse me. Just survive.
You know, you look like your head fell on the cheese dip back in 1957. You're okay. This one, real fucking ugly. Oh. You see, I take these glasses off. She looks like a regular person, doesn't she, huh? Put them back on, formaldehyde face. That's what we got.
That's enough out of you. You get out or I call the cops.
Call the cops? You know what you need? You need a Brazilian plastic surgeon.
I've got one that can see.
What did you think of the design of the aliens themselves?
I'd like to know what the thought process was there, because they're striking. They're not exactly overly grotesque, but you can't get them out of your mind. And I think it's mostly the reflective kind of eyes that they had.
Yeah, they're like skeleton. It's very skeletal.
Weird open wound look they have on their face.
Yeah.
Because you never see them in color, at least for me. Because it looks like they're open wound, I don't necessarily know if that's just like
skin and musculature.
Is it like a Freddy Krueger type thing where it's patches of open skin?
You look as shitty to us as we do to you.
Impossible.
We come from a great society of burn victims.
Yeah. But they also come across as looking like a kind of, like I said, classic sci-fi horror monster. They almost look like the old rubber mask and zipper set. Because they don't look like overly well done, but it works.
They're kind of like the shit. I can't remember which Planet of the Apes movie it was, where they find the ones at the end that worship the bomb and stuff.
Oh, Five. That was Beneath.
Yeah.
But I like the reflective eyes. That works really well. But you can't shake, once you see that alien for the first time, it's indelible. Like, you can't get that image out of your head. And in fact, it's one of the few things I remember about this movie, never having seen it, but I know scenes of it, because they would show the famous clips. Like, I've seen the clips before, and I still remember the design of the aliens, even never having seen the movie. So, you know, it's popular. I mean, you know, those images have been seen outside of the film.
Did you see the picture I put up on Horror 101? The banner picture?
What?
It's a $1 bill with all the quips, like, yeah, obey. Yeah.
This is your God.
And it's Barack Obama in the middle as the They Live alien.
It reminds me a lot of the posters they used to put in the background in Brazil. Like, all the mock motivational posters. Like, suspicion breeds confidence. I don't know, some of the magazines are just a little too heavy-handed. Like, every page saying something, and it's like, really? They wouldn't have actual articles that the aliens would read, so the aliens can't read any of our articles.
Yeah, it's like when you see one of the aliens going and reading the thing, it's just like, yes, I must consume. Yeah, that's a good one. Marry and reproduce.
I think it was more subliminal. Yeah. It was more of a subliminal signal that was being sent to you that you could only see outright if you had the Hoffman lenses on.
That's how I took it.
That's how I assumed it. Like, even I presume, like, you know, the billboards, they see something that's relevant to them.
Yeah.
Television, radio, however they get that message across, they see their own version of that.
There's two scenes in this film that are worth the price of admission. The first is when Piper arms himself to the teeth, goes to a bank, and starts shooting every fucking alien he can see through those glasses.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit. Oh.
Near the entrance, has a shotgun. White male, 30s, long hair.
Mama don't like tattletales.
Wearing sunglasses.
Now to us, it looks like he just did the human race a great big favor. But to everybody else, he's a cold-blooded killer. And he has to take a hostage to get his ass out of there, which turns out to be Meg Foster.
Take it easy. A little ride out of here. Close the door.
I kept thinking they couldn't afford Kirstie Alley, you know, because I thought that would have been. But I don't know. She's just so flat. I don't know what to make of her except that I didn't like her.
Well, I think because they're trying to make her emotionless.
Yeah.
And I think she's perfect for that part.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she plays a bitch in every single one I've seen her in, so.
She can pull off that creepy, calm demeanor.
You're fighting the forces of evil that none of us can see without sunglasses.
Take a look.
If you want me to look through your sunglasses, I'll look through your sunglasses. If I don't see what you see, I'm gonna see it anyway.
You know what? She's always a villain. She's always a bitch. I don't think I've ever seen her in anything. She was the bitch in Leviathan. She was the corporate shill in Leviathan, who Peter Weller punches out at the end of the film when he makes it topside. In this one, she's the villain. Evil Lynn, goes without saying. I mean, she's
the way she looks.
She's got severe features and those creepy blue eyes.
She just looks like a bad person.
She looks like she should have been cast as one of the visitors in V, doesn't she?
So what do you do?
Assistant Program Director, Cable 54.
A TV station?
Yes.
They're sending some kind of signals out of TV sets.
I did not see that coming. That shocked me. And actually, I don't know who the stunt person was. I don't think it was actually Roddy who actually did the fall there. But
I think he was a stunt.
Did it?
Yeah.
Because that looked genuinely painful. I mean, that was a hell of a... some really fine stunt work there. But when he topples over the balcony railing, does the drop down the hill, I was like, holy Christ, how does he walk away from this?
Yo. 1 week's pay. It's the best I could do.
Wait!
Hey! You better find yourself someplace to hide and keep praying nobody ever finds you.
Try these on.
Look, you crazy mother.
Put these on.
Hey! Stay away from me.
I'm telling you, you dumb son of a...
Which brings us to epic scene number 2 from They Live.
I'm trying to save you and your family's life.
You couldn't even save your own!
I'm giving you a choice. Either put on these glasses or start eating that trash can.
Not this year.
Okay. All right.
The alley fight between these two titans is 5 full minutes of some of the best hand-to-hand combat you'll ever see in a movie. That's no exaggeration either. They practiced and choreographed for weeks to the point where they were landing real punches as long as it wasn't in the face. And of course, there had to be some wrestling moves thrown in.
Put on the glasses.
I wanted to do a fight that was different than any other movie fight I'd seen. And I brought Jeff Amata in, and I brought Roddy in, and we all sat around and talked about it. About what would make a fight unique in the sense that you haven't seen anything like this. and I wanted to utilize some of Roddy's professional wrestling techniques and knowledge.
Man, I told you, I didn't want to be in.
But interestingly, Roddy and Keith became real close friends during the shooting. And after they had kind of beaten each other silly, they became real, real close friends, and they would share ideas back and forth.
Put the glasses on! Put them on!
And I have to agree with you guys on the fight scene. I enjoyed the fight scene.
That was
only because I'm a wrestling fan, so I enjoyed it.
That fight scene, to anybody who hasn't seen the movie, that's worth the price of admission right there. Watching Roddy Piper. It's not a one-sided fight. They take turns.
They beat the shit out of each other.
And, of course, they throw in a few minor wrestling moves the in there, draw. Just as an homage to where he came from.
You dirty motherfucker!
Look! Look at them! They're everywhere!
I don't know. Maybe they can see Alley 5th and Spring.
Now, hold on. You ain't the first son of a bitch to wake up out of their dream.
All his comments, all his lines were like one-liners.
Yeah.
That's all that they were. There was no depth to anything really he said. It was all cliche.
Life's a bitch. She's back in heat.
We never do get to see what their master plan is or why they're so evil. That's the only downside, really, to this movie that I find.
He's mentioned a couple times that they're taking over.
They're terraforming. They mentioned that.
Yeah.
Right.
They're terraforming. They're basically just helping us get along by taking over the planet. Like, they control it. They're making the elite more powerful as long as they're under their umbrella.
Right. Well, the city's crawling with cops looking for us. And most of the cops are human. They've been told that we're commies trying to bring down the government. And some of them are being recruited. Creatures are trading wealth, power.
You mean people are joining up with them?
Most of us just sell out right away. Then all of a sudden we get promoted. Our bank accounts get bigger. We start buying new houses, cars. Perfect, isn't it? We'll do anything to be rich.
They're cutting taxes for the rich.
That's right. They're
cutting taxes. They are for the rich. Republican Party.
So they're basically saying the rich elite are really just aliens trying to overthrow the planet.
I'd like to know.
Which again would tie in so much with the shit that's going on today. Donald Trump is the leading Republican candidate. You're going to tell me he's not a fucking alien?
What do these things want, and why are they here? It's in their best interests. They're free enterprisers. The Earth is just another developing planet. Their third world.
We are like a natural resource to them. Deplete the planet, move on to another. They want benign indifference. They want us drugging. We could be pets. We could be food. But all we really are is livestock.
As a child of the 50s, I grew up watching old science fiction monster horror films. And one of the classics of the 50s was Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which is they're among us, but we can't really tell. I always believe aliens should be evil. I don't think that Close Encounters or E.T. is valid because they're not evil, they're nice. When Reagan was elected, I was at first confused. He's talking from a rich man's point of view. Reaganomics was don't get in the way of the rich because if they make more money, then you'll get some. And during his time in office, he'd started destroying the unions and poverty increased. And I thought, where's my country going here? Why are so many people buying into this? I wanted to strike out in some way, so I cast the Republicans as alien creatures.
But I just have a difficult time classifying this as a horror movie.
It's not.
It's
not. That was the first thing I said to Brian.
It's a sci-fi. It's more sci-fi. Yeah. It's like a Twilight Zone episode, only 90 minutes long.
Yeah. Like you say, probably more topical today.
Yeah.
It has a lot to say about capitalism. But
capitalism, Big Brother, police states.
Yeah, like all the shit that they're showing, the gap between the upper class and the lower class, the police being like a private army of the elite kind of deal.
Militarization.
All that.
Especially police militarization.
Drones. Like,
all that shit.
This was made because of the 80s greed, the Reagan era.
Right.
You know what I mean? And now, if you look at it now, it's like even 10 times worse than it was in the 80s. It's just snowballed since then, man.
Yep. So, I mean, this would have been great today. Like, this movie would have been very topical.
Honestly, this is a movie that could honestly use a remake now. It'd be poignant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ooh, I don't get to use that word very often. Poignant.
Or
is there a G
movie that could have been a remake today?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Two things we never say.
It's like something we're actually crying for a remake of.
Yeah.
The world needs a wake-up call. We're gonna phone it in.
They're here, they're taking over, and the protagonist has woken up, and this is his story to try and deal with it.
Nude was not a fan of this movie.
That's the name of the movie, They Live.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Because they suck.
What?! Really?
Oh, and Nude... Shots fired by Nude.
Oh my goodness. Shots
fired. Oh, expand Whoa. On this thought. Expand on this thought, Nude.
Horrible acting. Horrible.
Oh,
I'm having a hard time. I don't like anybody in this movie. I'm not siding with anybody.
But Keith David had a family in Detroit.
But he had a family in Detroit.
Well, that's what he does. That's what he gets for leaving them in Detroit. You know what I mean? Like
leave them in Detroit.
Can somebody please explain to me what the hell that's all about?
Just that idiot licking his nuts again.
How does Piper and the Resistance plan on foiling this alien hostile takeover? We're gonna let you watch the movie and figure that out.
Nude, I will, with just a bit of hazard, ask you to score the film.
I'll give it a 6.
A 6.
Just because, like I said, Roddy Piper's in it. The fight scene, but just for nostalgic purposes, because I really liked him growing up as a wrestler. But the movie itself is not one of my favorites that we've reviewed.
Look, man, I don't need that kind of shit. What are we gonna do?
Meek.
Well,
I should do it like Hogan.
Well, brother, let me tell you something, brother. We love you. Come here, give us a hug.
Snap into a Slim Jim.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and review a movie for a podcast. And I left my gum in the car. I would honestly score this one about 7.5, purely for nostalgia purposes. I will admit it is an extremely flawed movie. It is not a well-acted movie, but it's still, you know, it's mid-80s, it's Rowdy Roddy Piper. The fight scene's awesome. Some of the one-liners are great, some of them not so much. It's got this weird kind of mid-80s Reaganomics dystopia thing going for it, which is funny because, like, there's elements of this movie that were refined and made into far better movies later on. But, I stand by my 7.5. I have watched this movie far too many times to grade it lower.
Don't wear them glasses too long. Starts to feel like a knife turning in your skull.
Nefarious Paul B.
I will go half a point higher than Nick and give it 8 out of 10. It's one of my favorite Carpenter films.
Really?
Top 5, for sure. It's not well acted. And there are plot holes you can drive a bus through. But I first saw it in 1987, so I saw it when I was 9 years old. And, you know, watching it again for nostalgia is perfect. You know, I enjoyed it then, I enjoyed it now.
The old cynicism is gone. We're optimistic as to what becomes of it all. We don't need pessimism.
Brian Stewart?
I'm going to give it a solid 7, maybe even a 7.5. Obviously, it's a lot of fun. I do appreciate an action movie where the heroes aren't indestructible, where you can see them feel the pain a bit, where the suffering lingers. I like the message. I think it has a lot to say and probably has more to say today and probably should be re-released or, dare I say it, those dreadful words, remade. But it was a lot of fun. I've always enjoyed Keith David and just about everything he's ever done, and he's great supporting cast in this. A few surprises here and there that I didn't see coming, like the fall down the side of the hill out of the apartment, and a few, you know, good signature Carpenter staples that we've seen in his other movies here. So soundtrack, not one of his best, somewhat repetitive, and not quite as memorable as his other films, but. All in all, it's for me, it's lower tier Carpenter, but lower tier Carpenter is still better than most action directors. So, but I really did have a fun time watching it.
You know, that really answers my fucking question. Well, when you get some kind of master plan, you let me know, huh?
I'd give it a 7, only because for me, it's probably, I'm on the opposite side of Nefarious' spectrum. I think it's probably his weakest movie, particularly his weakest movie from the 80s. I'll put it like this. If Roddy Piper had not passed away, this show would have been something else. I can guarantee it, because They Live was never on my radar to add to the Horror 101 repertoire. Horror, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, it's got horror elements, but it's more of a sci-fi and a big economic message. You know what I mean? But to make a movie near the end of the Reagan days, when communism was still the bad guy and capitalism was the good, wholesome American way, this countered that. This said, you know, it's maybe it's not all that you think it is. You know, like it recognized the gap between the rich and the poor. Watching it now, 30 years later, it's like a warning of the shit that I'm watching now.
Our projections show that by the year 2025, not only America, but the entire planet will be under the protection and the dominion of this power alliance.
But the American way is not about being good Christian or about being good to one another. It's about greed. Greed is good. It's Gordon Gekko. Greed is good for America. And capitalism has become the center of their natural identity.
Master Piper is here. I'm having trouble finding any brave people to come on the pit. You see, they don't want to come on no more because they're kind of afraid of RP, Beastmaster.
And not a lot of people know he was actually Canadian.
Yeah, from Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan.
Oh, really?
Piper's big thing was he was never really like that great of a wrestler. He was all about image and he was mic skills. Like,
right.
He was probably, for his time, the best actor of the wrestlers that they had.
Which is sort of weird, but I can kind of sort of understand why he had all the one-liners.
I'd like to say something to you, like, you're a very ugly person. Yeah, you're really a very stupid, I am very handsome, you really are a very stupid person, aren't you? You know, you couldn't get a date with $100 bill on your forehead. You know that?
Yeah. I liked wrestling back in the Piper days, you know, when he was calling Mr. T a shit like that.
Snuka with coconuts.
And he was an asshole. Like, his character was an asshole. You loved to hate Piper.
This big fat Captain Louis Albano, all of a sudden you see, he figures he's got something to say to me because we've had all this difficulty, and I'd just like to say to you, how you doing, Faxo?
How did he die?
It said he was in his sleep, heart attack. Heart
really?
Attack.
Yeah. He was recovering from cancer, too.
Yeah, he had cancer a few years ago. This was heart attack.
Yeah, I think he had, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma or something like that? Yeah.
And they said he had beat it last year. And then they said natural causes.
It was an interview that just came out with him from a few years ago where somebody just unearthed it, where he said that he wouldn't live past 65. Just comes out and says it, so. Because he kind of knew.
How old was he? 61.
61?
Yeah. Piper will be remembered here as one of the greats, always entertaining, and along with Keith David, he carried They Live perfectly. Our only regret was never getting to have more features with him as the star. And we hope this show will help immortalize this man who was always larger than life and a great credit to whatever industry he was involved in. Rest in peace, Rowdy Roddy Piper, and thank you for the memories.
As simple as this!
Just when they think they got the answers, I change the questions.
And that wraps up our show on They Live. Admittedly, not an exact horror film, but certainly a movie created by one of the greats, John Carpenter. Along with Piper, Foster, and David, look for Buck Flower in the film as a vagabond, another Carpenter favorite, who you might recognize from Escape from New York, Wishmaster, Friday the 13th Part 3, and a bunch of other genre titles. We've already recorded our next episode, so expect that on the way in the next few weeks. For the world-famous Brian Stewart, the cult sensation Nick McPherson, the nefarious Paul B., my lovely wife the Nude, this is Cash Wompomp saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you. And we're going to help you find it right here at Horror 101, Educating Your Fears.
There's a drink called Crown Royal, and it comes in a purple bag.
Absolutely.
It's been a while, but I remember it. Someday we'll talk about that.